This week on Art in the Air features artist Nick Bridge, who uses the urban environment combined with aspects of the native prairie to inspire his work exhibited at Chicago's Springboard Arts Gallery. Next, we speak to Canterbury Theater's artistic directors about their 2021 summer season. Our spotlight is on Dune Summer Theater June 26 Cabaret Night and details about their next production of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. And we'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight, Dunes Summer Theater, Dunes Arts Foundation, and they're going to be talking about what's coming up and what they just had at their place. Guys, a lot of things happening this summer. We'd like to welcome Tito Sanchez-Williams, Elise Cremani, and Steve Scott, hello, the director of the upcoming show. So welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone.
Thank you for having us.
Well, I'll toss it, I guess, to Elise first about what you have coming up as a cabaret on June 26th. And tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, well, we're going to be celebrating our 70th anniversary of the Dunes Arts Foundation by having a gala. Begins at 6 p.m., 6 to 8 p.m. at Barker Hall, the historic Barker Hall. And we'll be celebrating seven decades of Broadway tunes. So we're going to have one song from each, South Pacific, Cabaret, Jesus Christ Superstar, Les Mis, Rent, Putnam County, and we end with Working. And we have some of our stars singing, and Steve Scott, the great Steve Scott, will be our MC.
Very fabulous. Good.
Yeah, dinner by Panini Panini. Everybody's talking about how good that food is, so you'll have a lovely dinner with them. And tickets are $100. This is a fundraiser, and we're hoping to raise enough funds so we can start our renovations this fall.
And so we'll toss it to you, Tito. You had just closed out your first show of this season. Tell us a little about Forever Plaid and how it went.
Oh, it went phenomenal. I was just overwhelmed with the amount of support and love. We got a lot of nice. We got a standing ovation, which is also it's what means the world for a performer. The fact that the audience enjoyed it so much. And we had actually had people that went two, three times to see it because they enjoyed it that much. And that is also a big sign of a successful production, that you liked it so much, you wanted to just see it again.
Yeah, and bring somebody else with you.
Yeah, and that's what they did.
Well, then now after the June 26th event, and we did talk about this a couple times, Steve Scott's going to be the director on a Shakespeare classic. Steve, tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we're doing a play very fitting for this time of year, A Midsummer Night's Dream, which will open on July 9th. We're in the middle of rehearsals for it now. And it's basically a play about the crazy things that love makes you do. The plot centers on... Well, it centers on a lot of things. There are actually three or four different plots going on. But the main plot centers on two pairs of lovers and the feelings that they have for each other. And the one in one pair is in love with somebody in the other pair and how all of that goes around. And all of this is in the midst of the coronation of a new queen and the preparations for that. And the fairy prince Oberon and the fairy queen Titania, who kind of oversee everything in the world, are having their own marital problems. It's about love in all of its guises, when you're frantic in love, when you're crazy in love, and when you finally find the one that you truly love. What happens? It's absolutely delightful, and I've got a wonderful company of actors, 10 actors playing a lot of different roles, and the whole thing is less than an hour and a half long. So it's a perfect entertainment for a midsummer night.
So, Tito, do I remember right? Do you have a role in The Midsummer?
I do. I'm one of those. It's so funny because the production I know really well, and Steve cast me as Theseus. So Theseus is that type of Theseus, the one that you know from Greek mythology, the hero, kind of like the Duke of Athens. And pretty much what happens is that it also centers a little bit about me in the beginning and the end. I'm supposed to have my wedding with Hippolyta. Now, Steve, a great director that he is, he did something that usually a lot of people don't do, which is create a conflict from the very beginning with Hippolyta, even though we're supposed to be married, she plays hard again. So there's a lot of comedy there that I'm enjoying, and it's really good and fun. But also on top of that, he also made me a fairy. So my fairy is very interesting fairy. I'm the Duke of Athens, but then I become a fairy, and I don't want to give anything away because it's kind of interesting fairy.
Yeah. Tito is a very snarky fairy. So he kind of redefines our concept of what a fairy is. So it'll be a lot of fun.
Can't wait to see the costuming.
I think Steve would like to talk about the theme of the costumes because that's a thing of its own.
Well, the fairy world is going to be basically done in kind of punk rock. And we have a wonderful young designer designing the costumes for Hippolyta, or for Oberon and Titania and the fairies.
Yeah, Bonnie Fontaine. Yeah,
they're going to look kind of out of this world in a familiar way. The rest of the clothes are fairly contemporary, and there's lots of other stuff going on with it, so it should be a lot of fun.
The performance dates for Midsummer Night's Dream, and this is all outdoors, correct?
Yeah, they're July 9th through the 25th. It'll be Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 6 p.m. to 7:30. It's outdoors. And the best way to get tickets are to go to our website, dunesarts.org.
Okay, well, thank you so much for all of you. That's Dune Arts Foundation for Dune Summer Theater, Midsummer Night's Dream, July 9th through 25th. And, of course, the Through the Decades Cabaret on June 26th. Thank you for being on Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. We'd like to welcome to Art on the Air. Throughout his work, it's been the use of light, regardless of media or genre. Desire to paint manifested itself in the exploration of textures, urban landscape, remnants of native prairie, everything with culture and life. That's the kind of work that our guest has. We'd like to welcome Nick Bridge and, of course, his bride, Sue Bridge, to Art on the Air. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, why don't we start with you, Nick? Tell us a little bit about your life journey, where you grew up and everything. I always like to say how you got from where you were to where you are now.
Sure. I grew up downstate in Champaign, Illinois, and my father was an artist himself. He ended up in commercial art field, even though he had gone to school and studied painting and at the U of I in Champaign and had gotten his master's in painting, his master of arts. Having a family of four children, he ended up very quickly going back into commercial art in order to support us. And during the time, I think he was good at it. He ended up being the art director of the local television, CBS television station in Champaign. And most of the time I was growing up, that's what he did. For me personally, it meant that I always was focused on art and learning more about it and really never seriously considered doing anything else until I got into college. To me, kind of interesting thing about it was my dad being a post-World War II art student, he and his friends, who many of whom I knew that he was in art school with, they were into abstract expressionism. That's the style of the time. And the works that survive of his from that time were all kind of in that mode. Personally, I did not start out with that. I started out painting more realistically. I liked some abstract painting, but for whatever reason, when I initially started out painting when I was in my mid-30s, I left the field of public relations and went to the American Academy of Art in Chicago. And at the time, I kind of assumed that I was going to go into portraiture. I enjoyed painting people, and I really didn't know an awful lot as far as galleries and how you present yourself, that type of thing. So I ended up, I started with the idea that I'd become a portrait artist, and I was focused more on developing my skills in representational art. And pretty quickly, though, I veered into portraying the urban landscape. And that's lived in Chicago around the, from the time I got out of college. I was always fascinated by the city and by its changing neighborhoods and the contrasts and the textures and all of those kinds of things. So most of my work has been reflective of the urban landscape, even when I took to painting the prairie, because my background with the DNR, I found that I was portraying the prairie in kind of an urban context, because what you see now is not the vast prairie that the first settlers here encountered. What you see are little postage stamps of land that are next to shopping malls next to golf courses or whatever,
In the medians of the roads.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So it was virtual. Most of the vast majority of things that I've produced over the years have tied in somehow in the urban landscape. The first series of paintings, the coherent series of paintings I did, were all billboards and light poles.
My experience with your work is urban landscape doesn't even really explain it enough. It's a very thoughtful urban landscape, especially the first paintings that I saw of yours. When you say urban landscape, to my mind, a harshness comes across, but that's not what your work is. And I can see, now hearing about your father's abstract expressionism, I think it possibly informed your color palette and the way you apply your colors. Because you can, if you squinted, it would be an urban landscape abstract sometimes, even that early work from 15 years ago.
Yeah, I mentioned before that I was a little influenced by the fact that my dad's paintings were abstract. There's another artist who, I'm not sure if he's actually even still alive, a gentleman named Martin Herdig, whose work I have paid a lot of attention to over the years. And my brother-in-law, Tom Yeager, who's an architect, owns a couple of Mr. Herdig's paintings. He taught at UIC with my brother-in-law. And I've always been really drawn to these paintings by Herdig. And a few years ago, I ran into more of his work at the Ukrainian Institute of Modern Art in Chicago. And his work is, I guess it could be characterized as kind of abstract expressionist in a way. Just his compositions and the way his paint handling and things like that, I looked at, and they have a kind of a landscape-y quality to them, but they aren't overtly landscapes. And I really looked at these, have looked at these real intensely and tried to apply some of the lessons that I learned from that, with particularly with the series of paintings I'm doing now, where I'm not, earlier I was just combining images. Now I'm combining images along with broad swaths of color and other kinds of markings on the canvas. So
I know the recent work is just absolutely incredibly gorgeous. And
thank you.
But I, you know, I feel that way about your work in general, but I really love the current work. I know cities are so interesting because of the grids, and you really get a sense of that when you do your bird's eye kind of images.
Yeah.
You know, I love city paintings.
You know, I'd like to also move on to Sue just briefly and tell us a little bit about your story, how you got from where you were and how you guys got together.
We both were at the University of Illinois at the same time. I was studying to be a teacher, and Nick was in journalism at that time.
Yeah.
And so we actually met in a somewhat arty sort of way. He was in a fraternity and I was in a sorority, and we were paired for what was called at that time stunt show. And so it happened, not by talent, but by mistake probably, that I ended up to be the female lead for a sorority in the stunt show. And we were paired with Nick's house. I was dancing and leaping through a practice at their house. And apparently, although I didn't know it, Nick saw me from the staircase. And that was the beginning of 51 years of marriage.
Oh, what a great story.
And now, what are you doing right now, Sue? What have you done career-wise and such?
Well, I taught English for many years and then became a department chair, an assistant principal, a principal in the West Suburban, district of the Glenbard School District, and ended up there as principal at Glenbard West High School in Glen Allen for a decade. And then Nick and I moved back to Oak Park, which we had been living in since 1970, and I became the principal and superintendent of the high school district here for Oak Park and River Forest. And was in that position until 2007, when I retired and immediately flunked retirement and began teaching full time as a professor at Concordia University in River Forest, where I was in the graduate department there teaching master's and doctoral students in educational administration. And I retired from that 7 years later and flunked retirement once again, and then became a volunteer with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra League. They have a wonderful program called Adventures in Music. And I became one of their volunteers, where they provide a musical experience for underserved children and their families, and provide a fall, winter, and spring concert experience for the entire family in Symphony Center. We also bring music to the classrooms of the schools that are participating. And then one weekend in fall, winter, and spring, bring them to Orchestra Hall, where they have a morning of, oh boy, all kinds of musical experiences that culminate then in a full concert that the Chicago Symphony Orchestra puts on for the kids and for their families. And it is an absolutely joyous experience. It's been on a hiatus a little bit for much of the pandemic time, but we're gearing up to do it again. And unfortunately, I was overly enthusiastic, I can't get overly enthusiastic about the program because it's the best.
Sounds magnificent.
It is. And so then I found myself, I guess it was based on my enthusiasm, they asked me to be the president of the league, which is a group of 230-some symphony lovers. And we back up all of and support funding as best we can of the educational programs that the Chicago Symphony Orchestra Association and the Negaunee Institute at the CSOA provide for the kids in and around the city of Chicago. So that's really what I'm doing right now.
Doesn't surprise me because you both have been tireless art advocates, and the flunking retirement sounds right in line.
Sue, I have one quick question, which is completely off the subject as an English teacher. Oxford comma or not?
Yes.
Okay. I'm a believer in Oxford commas.
I would say yes.
Yes, very good.
So I want to go back to journalism school. So, Nick, that's mm-hmm. you veered into journalism.
Yes, I did. I actually, in the early 70s, I sort of got my baptism under fire as a journalist working for the City News Bureau of Chicago, which was owned by the major dailies and supplied all of the major media outlets in the city with stories, mostly crime, police, court stories, things like that. We did have a city hall reporter, very deeply involved in government generally. It was more the criminal justice system than anything else. And like I said, a baptism under fire. It was a quick way to learn the basics of reporting and how to be very aggressive in pursuing that. And I ended up moving on from there to work for the Suburban Trib, which was a wholly owned subsidiary of the Chicago Tribune that covered suburban news. And I did that for a few years before I ended up in doing public relations for the Illinois Department of Conservation. And eventually I decided that I really needed to go get back into the arts and went back to art school. By the way, I would like to make a little plug for a gallery a show that I'm in right now at a wonderful new gallery in Wicker Park in Chicago called Springboard Arts. And the show is a group show, but it's a rather large gallery. So each of us who's in the show, I think there are 17 artists, each of us have quite a few pieces of work in the show called Paradigm. And the address, it's on North Avenue at 1910 West North Avenue in Chicago. And that's Springboard Arts in the middle of Wicker Park. And it is on through August 23rd.
So how many pieces do you have in that show? And is it your current work?
Yes, it is my current work. And I think there are about 8 pieces. Mm-hmm. The gallery has 12 of my works. A couple of larger pieces they did not put in just because of spatial limitations, but the work is very accessible. Even the largest pieces. This gallery has a really unusual. They built a gallery out just in the past year. It's probably my guess is that it's about 5,000 square feet. On 2 floors, and there's, besides quite a bit of viewing space, they have a really interesting setup with drawers, vertical drawers, if you can picture that, that pull out from the wall that paintings hang on. So, you know, if somebody wants to see one of the artists, another work of the artist, and it's not, doesn't have to be, happen to be on exhibit, they can just pull this thing out into the middle of the room and boom.
Yeah, it's not on the wall, it's in the wall.
Yeah, it's like a pocket door, kind of.
Yeah, I know that this, the gallery's been talked about for a couple of years. I think Susan Blackman was originally...
That is right. Yeah. This a lady, Donna Van Ekren, who is a businesswoman. Donna was CEO of her family's rather large business and retired a few years ago and decided she wanted to get into the gallery business. And she hired and a couple of other people to help put this whole concept together. And I think she currently has about 30 artists in her stable.
So do you have another show after this one on the books?
Not at the moment. I don't have another show at Springboard on the books. I'm not sure what their plans are after August 23rd. But I do. I have to go out and start selling myself again.
Nick, let me ask you a little bit about how COVID impacted you and what you're looking forward to as we emerge from that.
You know, I hesitate to even say, because for me in particular, it had very little impact. You know, I have a studio I live in Oak Park. I have a studio outside of my home that's in Oak Park that I share space with two other people. The only, pardon?
In the Arts
District. Yeah, it's in the Arts District of Oak Park on Harrison Street. And the only real impact it had for us was that we decided that we would split time in the studio so we weren't there at the same time, at least until we all got vaccinated. So it was kind of revolving door where one of us would be in it and the other would be out. So that limited my time a little bit during the weekend there, but it wasn't anything that was that drastically different. And, you know, as an artist, you spend time by yourself anyway, painting. So it wasn't. It wasn't like I was felt like I was terribly isolated or anything. And I, you know, unlike a lot of people who felt like they were kind of locked in their houses, I'm out running around, you know, like in the community, going to and from my studio.
Well, but also I want to say, you know, you're talking about Oak Park. I want to say congratulations on being one of the 10 muralists picked to do the small murals.
Oh, thank you. I have that. That's a project that I have coming up, and it's something that is near to my heart because it allows me to combine my interest in the environment and my art. You know, so I'm doing what we call mini murals. It's a mural along on the railroad embankment in Oak Park, which each space is like 11 feet high by 6 feet wide. And, you know, like I've chosen to design a piece that kind of portrays the natural history of our village and some of the developments that came along with that. 2 years ago, I did a prior piece which incorporated elements from the original plats of survey that showed, and it, you know, it's kind of a lucky coincidence that the village of Oak Park is a rectangle that is about the same proportions as the space that we have for the painting. So I did this partial representation of a plat of survey that included the area that the village of Oak Park was in. And on this plat of survey, which was done in like 1820, this is before there were white settlers in the area, it shows in the survey, it shows where there was an oak savanna in the village. There are still trees that survive from the savanna, what we call heritage oaks or pre-settlement oaks, trees that are over 200 years old that are mostly now on private property, you know, scattered through this one area of the village. And then, you know, also on the plat of survey, it showed where there was a swamp, which is now the intersection of Lake and Harlem.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And so the landscape has been totally changed as visually. So it's, you know, like my design for that earlier mural capitalizes on some of those elements of the landscape, and it includes, you know, things like a Dick Sissel, which is a prairie bird, a large version of it, and monarch butterfly and other kinds of prairie plants too.
Well, Nick, we have to wrap it up there. Quickly give us your website and give us the exhibit information one more time.
Yeah, my website is simply nickbridge.com, all in one word in lower caps. And the show Paradigm is currently at Springboard Arts at 1910 West
North Avenue
in Chicago. And it is on until August 23rd.
Okay, excellent. Well, that was Nick Bridge and also Sue Bridge. Thank you so much for coming on our show and sharing your art and the exhibit. And you get to Springboard Arts. You can find them online by doing a Google search. Nick and Sue, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks. I hope I didn't talk too fast.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Art in the Air would like to welcome Canterbury Theatre's Artistic and Associate Artistic Director, Ray Scott Crawford and David Graham. And they're going to tell us about their entire summer season. Canterbury is, of course, located on Franklin Street, 807 Franklin Street in Michigan City, a long time. Gentlemen, welcome to Art on the Air.
Aloha, welcome.
Thank you.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's great to see you guys.
Yeah,
great. Well, Ray, we'll start with you as Artistic Director. Briefly give us just a thumbnail of your background and everything, a little bit about the theater, and then we'll move on to David.
Okay. Well, when I finished my initial round of schooling, I auditioned for and was cast by the Canterbury Summer Theater in 1982. And I was here as an actor for 4 years, and then they made me Artistic Director, and I've been here ever since. Every summer, I come back to Michigan City. But I worked in Chicago for many years as an actor and designer and director. And then I moved south and had taught school at community college near my hometown. And now I'm Dean of Communication and Performing Arts at Bossier Parish Community College. But I've maintained my relationship with the Canterbury and provided a lot of opportunities for young professionals.
Excellent. And David, tell us about your background real briefly.
Well, I first actually became associated with Canterbury when I was pursuing my MFA in acting and directing at Texas Tech University in Lubbock, Texas. And that's where I met Ray Scott, who was in the PhD program at the time. So we became friends, and he hired me. My first season was 1986. And I was hired as an actor and a director. And then later on, I became a lighting designer. So I've been here. Oh, I've had a hand in most every season, except maybe three or four since 86. And then I live in Chicago. I moved to Chicago in about 1987. Ray Scott and I worked in a theater company there called the Athenaeum Theater Company and got to do a lot of great shows there. I'm still in Chicago, and about 8 or 9 years ago, I became Associate Artistic Director here, and this has been one of my, a main focus for me, ever since. So we are just very happy to be back and have live theater again. It's very exhilarating.
Not only are both of you and the Canterbury, it's like your Michigan City jewels, but the Canterbury Theater is really a regional treasure thanks to both of you. I mean, your dedication and ambition is just fantastic. And somehow you exceed the previous year every year. You're like, wow, this is so fabulous. Where can it go next year? And then it's even more fabulous. So thank you.
Tell us a little bit about the history of Canterbury Theater, its origins and everything, and then we're going to move on to your current season.
There was an entrepreneur in Michigan City back in the late 60s. His name was Lyman Taylor. And he envisioned the Canterbury Theater as a festival place that would host a summer theater and then have entertainment and an outdoor space and all sorts of things. And he landed upon St. John's Church, and he, you know, had it redone and remade and hired an architect, turned it into a theater, which is now the building at 907 Franklin Street. Once he had his theater built, it was a 250-seat theater, a beautiful church building, and cobblestone environment, indoor-outdoor areas, a restaurant in the back. It was really shopping areas, really nice. He said, wait a minute, I think I need somebody that's going to actually do theater in this space. So he created what was then called the Festival Players Guild, and got a number of people from the community to be board members. And then they hired their first artistic director, and the artistic director set about designing the first season. It opened in the summer of 1969 and has had some, it had, you know, a full season every summer of various numbers of shows, but usually anywhere from 5 to 7 shows since then. And I was there for, you know, since 82. So a large portion of that in 97, earlier than that, the guild bought the building we're currently in, 807 Franklin, as a rehearsal space, scene shop, costume shop. And it was a winter theater too. They had a small performance space there. About 96, the owners of the old Canterbury were ready to sell, and we, you know, had reached the point where it wasn't really feasible to manage the building. It needed a lot of repair at that point. So they decided to sink their money into renovating 807 Franklin. They turned it into, they took a three-story storefront and turned it, or two stories in a basement, and turned it into a complete, well-rounded theater facility with everything is there. We love it. It's everything you can, you know, rehearse, build sets, do performances all in one space. And there's plenty of lobby room. It's very, very accessible is a good word for it. And so since 97, when we finally were able to move in, we've been in that building and doing summer seasons ever since. Now, last summer, because of COVID, was our virtual summer. So we had one show in August and then a show later on in I think it was early December. So we officially had a season. It just wasn't the same sort of season. So this year marks our 53rd season.
Excellent. Well, let's ask about one other thing, is and this is more personal, is about how COVID has impacted each one of you and your careers and things like that.
Well, I'll just go first. For me, living in Chicago, in terms of work environments, everything was shut down. In Chicago, I say it, you know, in jest, I've been living in the bunker for a year. I finally, you know, emerged in May and came out into the light. But I saw very, very few people in, you know, in the flesh. Everybody was very locked down there. So actually, yeah, a lot of us were just staying at our homes the whole time because they had closed down bars and restaurants and really discouraged any kind of social activity because the infection rate was so hot over there. So I was really happy come May after I got my vaccinations and all that. It's just so surreal to be out again among people.
My experience was a little bit different. Our first order of business was to decide whether or not to have a summer season. And of course, we waited until the last possible moment. I had a company not hired, but they were at the point of, I'm going to send you a contract or I'm going to call you and say it's a no-go. And we went back and forth with that right up until mid-April, I think, is when I finally we cut the cord and said, okay, we can't do this. So I immediately went to work. Figuring out how to do virtual stuff on Zoom or however we did. We ended up doing a virtual presentation on Twitch. And then the other show, we actually made a movie at my school and presented it at the Canterbury, and it had several Canterbury alumni in it. So we were able to, you know, continue the tradition. As far as school goes, we were shut down and all went virtual in September. I was able to teach acting and performance socially distanced with masks. And then in February, we went where we could go back to full scale teaching. And so I was able to teach, again, with social distancing and masks, but I had classroom as well. And then we went and set about to organize the company and hire people for the company for this summer. And, you know, everything opened up here in Indiana to allow us to do that. It all fell into place. So we're very thrilled to have audiences coming in. And
yeah.
What kind of protocols will be in place at the theater?
Well, right now we're following the Indiana protocol, and it's that our company is, we're ready for it. And the patrons can wear masks they wish. We have enough room for them to spread out as they wish. So everybody, I think, so far has felt very safe in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
How does that affect your seating capacity if you have distancing?
Well, we had planned, we had a big distancing plan going, but when Indiana said, you know, full capacity, we're letting our audiences distance themselves. We switched from reserve seats to general admission. That allows people to sit where they're comfortable.
Yeah.
So I would love to hear about the summer season. I know you just had a really successful first show, but what can you tell us about the second one?
Anyway, our first show was Out of Love. It was a show by Eleanor Cook. She's a UK playwright. I think there's only been, it shows about 4 years old. I'm thinking there's only been like maybe a couple of other productions of it in the US, one of which was the American premiere, which I saw in Chicago. Story about two girls, friends. It tracks them from childhood through their 30s. And it's about them growing up in a dead-end town and dreaming of getting out and all the kind of things that they overcome. And it's a lot about overcoming the dynamics of gender, sexuality, class, economic class. Their story is told, however the story is told, it's not in chronological order. In other words, it's multiple scenes, and the scenes are taken out of order in terms of the timeline to give you a little bit more of an insight into them and their characters. So it's a really nice little play.
Well, the next one coming up is 8-track, Sounds of the 70s, which, gosh, I mean, how do you even do that with all that great music from the 70s?
You know, there's 55 songs or pieces of songs in this show, and it comes in at under 2 hours with intermission, but it is if you heard it in the 70s, it's in here. In fact, one of our games that we play is that. Now, wait a minute. Is there such and such? Yeah, there's one there. Okay, we're good. But it's a four-person show, and we have some very talented singer-dancers that are going to town. It is nonstop, in and out. There's not really, it's not a play like there's a lot of dialogue. In fact, the dialogue is, some of it's from the actual songs themselves. You know, I think of the Three Dog Night song, Mama Told Me Not to Come. That's one of my favorite numbers in the show, because you're actually at that party and they're experiencing those lyrics that, you know, want some whiskey in your water, that kind of thing. So we're having a party on stage, but it's...
There are lots of fringe costuming.
It's fringe costuming and sparkles. And
very sparkly.
The first act is a little more of your protest into the, you know, mid-70s. And then the second act winds up in disco, and it's just a disco blowout. So I tell you, our audiences, I know them, and they're going to be...
Up and dancing.
Yes.
And that already opened on June 23rd. So that's running through July 3rd. So, because this will, of course, air on the 25th in that weekend. But it'll be running through July 3rd. Now, is that really basically a musical review then, correct? It's not really a book show.
It's what they call a jukebox.
Yeah, jukebox musicals. Yeah.
Yeah.
I wrote about that in my dissertation in theater. So.
Oh, okay. There you go.
So. Very good. And one question before we go on to the next show. You're not an equity house, or are you an equity house? Or
no, we're not. We're professional non-equity.
Non-equity. So
we hire young people either still in college or just out of college,
right,
building their resumes, and they get some good credits and some good networking, and they get a good opportunity to build their resumes.
And of course, you know, when I was at Theater at the Center, we advised a lot of them when we were making the transition to stay equity eligible as long as you can, because you can do theaters like you without having, you know, once you get that card, it's really tough to do other shows. So.
Yeah.
So your next show opens July 7th. Boy, you guys really doing flipping shows there. So tell us a little bit about that. And that's an updated version of the current show.
David, you want to talk about that one?
This one's
I love you. You're perfect. Now change. Yeah, this was an incredibly popular show. I think it was the longest running off Broadway review. It was very popular. Everybody did it, especially in the 90s. It was the kind of show that theaters would build spaces. And I know in Dallas, they did it at Theater 3 at a basement space. It ran for like 3 years or something like that. It's a wonderful show. It's very cute. It's vignettes. It's songs. It's about love and all those things. Very funny. It's got a very, very funny, very funny scenes and characters.
Lots of characters.
Yeah. And actually, we did it here in 2008 and had really great response to it. And I just happened to be looking for shows this year and noticed that the authors had come back and updated it so that it's going to have more references to, you know, the 2010s, the 20 teens. So there'll be more references. There'll be some changes in songs and other details like that. So we're looking forward to getting it on stage again because we know with the original, the audiences love it. It's just a lot of fun and a lot of laughs. And, you know, it's a very, very, very nice show.
David, is it still going to be the six actors playing all the different characters? Like actually, 6 actors, 60 characters?
Actually, we're going to be doing it with four. Yeah.
I noticed having done theater at the center and where we were doing fast changeovers, you have like really crazy changeovers where you close a show on the 17th, like the one you were talking about, and reopen one on the 21st and everything. So how do you do that with set? Do you kind of use a set, general set that you can use for things and just kind of redress it for each show?
Well, that has happened in the past occasionally, but generally we have a different set for every show. It's just our theater space is small. It's right. About 25 feet wide and 20 feet deep. So it's, you know, there's never going to be a ton of scenery. And we just have creative designers and technicians and carpenters. And we have a lot of stock scenery here that we use and we can repurpose over and over and over again. So we usually have one set on stage. We got another one built and get ready to put together. And it's being constructed while we're doing the first show. Right. And then, you know, Saturday night after the last show, they take down one, haul in the next one, and get it ready to go the next couple of days. So it's just a fast turnaround.
That's always a stressor, I'll tell you that. Just real quickly, at Theater at the Center, our big problem is our scene shop was on the lower level, and everything had to be built to go out through a set of double doors and up on the lift. And, of course, from the director, he didn't quite understand the logistics of that. And of course, as an equity thing, he said, we close the show, our matinee on Sunday. He wanted the set up and done, except maybe a few details, by 1 o'clock so he can rehearse on it. And it was kind of crazy, so especially in that space. And the sets were big, so.
Yeah.
We're not quite that crunch.
Yeah.
So we're back to music with a... Again, Ordinary Days. There's like over 20 songs in that one.
Yeah, this is a relatively new musical, and David found it, and I listened to it, and I really liked it. But it's we're going to have a little change of scenery, though. I Love You is certainly urban. Ordinary Days takes place in New York. I mean, it's on the streets of New York, and it's for young people and their various relationships, and they're intersecting. But one of the plot lines is that one of them loses his notes from school and he's trying to get them back. And another one finds them and is trying to get them back to him. So it's that quest trying, you know, getting cabs and trying to connect in a city that's big, but at the same time small. And it has that feel. You may remember or have seen the movie On the Town and the musical On the Town. To me, it's a contemporary version of that. Where, you know, we're in New York, but we live here, but we're trying to make connections, and it's not always as easy as it seems. The music is very exciting. It has flavors of Sondheim and flavors of Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein. And it's by Adam Kwan, and he's a relatively new a composer. And I think we're going to see a lot more from him as the years roll by. But I'm very excited to be doing it here.
So I know you're both, each of you are directing particular plays, but are you acting this season at all in any of them?
Well, I'm acting like a director. No.
I think at one time we were both on stage here a lot, but yeah, I've retired. I've retired my acting shoes as well. So we let the performers do it, the people we hire. So a lot of youthful energy.
Well, and that's, I actually enjoy directing a lot more, pulling it all together. Well, then you're going to close out your season with something quite different, which is based on the Robert Louis Stevenson thing. Tell us about that.
Well, I'll talk about that one a little bit. For the past 15 summers, we have had an exchange relationship with my school, Bossier Parish Community College, just in North Louisiana. And when I leave here, I'll leave here after A-Trek opens, and I'll go down there and immediately start rehearsals for that. It'll rehearse, you know, in the evenings and what have you. But I have my best students, and every summer we do this, and it's been very successful. They will produce the show there, direct the show there. We will have a two-week run of it there. And then we will pack it into a van and bring it up here. And at that point, it will become a Canterbury production. But it is the traditional story of Jekyll and Hyde, but it's been adapted by Jeffrey Hatcher. And the idea is that all of the various facets of Hyde are played by different characters. So they're surrounding him at various times and talking, getting his inner thoughts. So it's very Reader's Theater-esque, I guess, is a way of looking at it. But it's not, it's told in a very cinematic way, very quickly, but with very theatrical characters being built in. So six characters play the entire town of London. You know how that goes. So,
sure.
And all the doctors and the policemen and the characters that are directly involved in his life. But I'm very excited about it and look forward to bringing it back up here and presenting it.
I know it seems like one of the lines, and I don't know if it's in the play, but we cross that thin line between insanity and reason. That's what that whole thing sounds like, your whole season.
Is there ever any plans of taking Canterbury outside of just the summer, doing something, you know, like I know in the past that I think that was a historical thing there, but is that something that maybe in the office?
Yes, it is. And right now we were talking at lunch. One of our board members is in Cincinnati, and she's a longtime alumni of the theater, and she's now has been a board member. She's planning a production of an MTI musical that they're offering to everyone for free. You can just do this. It's a collection of scenes and songs from their catalog. And that's we're hoping to produce that in November. And we're also looking to on developing children's theater. We've been having some discussions about doing classes and presenting children's theater, either classical children's theater or musical. We're not quite sure yet where we're going to go with it, but we want to get things going back in the winter to bring in more of a year-round audience.
Yeah, we have this wonderful theater that's, you know, here year-round. I mean, it really is a nice, intimate space, perfect for so many, you know, many types of shows. You know, obviously not the big, huge, giant musicals like, you know, in Oklahoma or South Pacific or something, but it's very flexible. And also, like to mention that in the last couple of years, one of our alumni, another alum of our alumni, who was here in the late 70s, had gone on, pursued his career, jumped off from here, and he became a production manager and administrator at Disney. And he's retired, and he rejoined and came. He's in Florida, but he, for the last 2 years, has been redoing our theater in terms of bringing in brand new lighting equipment. We've got new curtains, new sound system, just all kinds of things around the theater that he's done. And so we're really well equipped. We've got a great lighting system, plenty of instruments, and we've got travelers and curtains and psychs and lions and tigers. Oh my.
Oh my.
You know, I also wanted to say congratulations to you, David. You've published two plays, right?
Yeah, one of them is a collection of plays, both of a collection of plays that I've had produced in Chicago. It's called Wasp and the Lampshade, that collection. The other one is just a single play called Candy's Prayer that's hasn't really a main stage. I've had several readings of it, you know, here and there around the country. So, yeah, those are available now on Amazon.
Excellent. Well, quickly recap your season for you. Tell us what the show is, how to get there, and how to get tickets.
It's Canterbury Summer Theater. We'll be here for the rest of the summer until August. It's 8-track, I Love You, You're Perfect Now, Change, Ordinary Days, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. It's 219-874-4269, 807 Franklin Street in Michigan City. And our website is canterburytheater.org. And that's spelled the pretentious way with a T-H-E-A-T-R-E.
Or the British way, yeah. And if you want to email them, just add an info at in front of that and you'll do it.
And our performance times are Wednesdays and Thursdays at 2 p.m., Friday nights at 7:30. And Saturday evenings at 6:30. And that's consistent throughout the summer. We're here till August the 7th.
Well, we'd like to thank you for being on Arna there. That's Ray Scott Crawford, Artistic Director, David Graham, who is the Associate Artistic Director for the Canterbury Theater. And appreciate you coming on Art of the Year and sharing about your summer season.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
You've been listening to Art in the Air, and we'd like to thank our guests this week on WVLP 103.1 FM and Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM, our weekly program covering arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art in the Air is heard every Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP. Art in the Air streams live at WVLP.org and is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m., plus is also heard on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., also streaming live at lakeshorepublicradio.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Radio's website as a podcast. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP Station Manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Our theme music is by Billy Foster, with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. Underwriters for Art in the Air, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments, and Mary LeVan, Arts Patron. Art in the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there. So don't just be an Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck, BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.